Welcome to another episode of the Lookout Landing podcast. I'm Kate Prusser, managing editor of Lookout Landing, and with me, as always, is John Troopin. John, how are you?
I'm doing just fine, Kate. It was a lovely Thursday here in Seattle. I went to Rooftop Brewing up in sort of North Queen Anne, which is lovely, albeit a slightly smaller rooftop than perhaps I expected. But good beer, free popcorn, hard not to like. So it was nice. Did you get outside and enjoy the sunshine at all today?
No, I sat inside and looked at a bunch of gifts of Edwin, made a bunch of gifts of Edwin Diaz throwing curveball or throwing sliders way outside because that's my life. It's super fun.
That's fair. It has been frustrating. I mean, it's been one of those sort of, it wasn't one of those sort of weeks, and then suddenly it was one of those sort of weeks, right? You know, we had such a wonderful beginning to this past calendar week. You know, we're recording this on Thursday, and I mean, last Thursday, and you know, we were about as high as I think we've been all season, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, so we're going to just kind of start out by talking about, you know, the last couple weeks fall pretty easily into two halves. We were so yep. high for a while, and then just everything kind of came crashing down after that. Mm-hmm. So let's at least take a little while to relive the fun part, which, you know, obviously whenever you get a chance to play the Detroit Tigers, who are not a good team, and you sweep them, That's fun. That's fun and good. Mm-hmm. And coming up with some momentum from taking that game in Texas where it was so hot and everyone was so miserable and, you know, but they salvaged that last game, winning the last game so you don't get swept and you get out of town with a win. I just think that's such a huge momentum thing.
It certainly feels that way as a fan. Whether there's much of an impact for the team or not, I don't know, but this team has done this, I think, fairly consistently this year of, like, they'll lose one of two or two of two in a road series, but they win that last game. And so it feels, you know, they feel like, well, but we're on the way up here. And they've done a very good job of sort of giving something to hold on to in a lot of road series this year.
Good is such a strong word. I mean, what they've done is make sure to occupy just enough of your time that you can't ever really give up on them.
It is true.
So we didn't record this past week because we were at Andrew Moore's debut, which obviously is exciting for me personally just because I'm a big fan of his and have been. You know, ever since I figured out what he was all about, I guess. Mm-hmm. And also, I was thinking back, and his is the first debut by a Mariners pitcher that I remember being at.
Really?
Yeah. I was at Sam Gaviglio's debut this year, and obviously that was fun, but Andrew Moore's debut was the first homegrown prospect who came up through our system, totally ours, since we saw Paxton and Walker, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, yeah, because Gaviglio was acquired from the
Cardinals
somewhere in there, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, seeing Elias's debut, too. Mm. I forget, where did we got him in trade too, though, didn't we? He wasn't ours.
Where did we get Rowanis? I'm not entirely sure. I remember I was at Adrian Sampson's initial start, which also didn't come up with the Mariners. Elias was a Mariners amateur free agent sign. They signed him from Cuba.
Okay, so I guess he was ours, and I did see his debut.
Poor guy. On the 60-day DL with a strained oblique.
Rough.
But, yeah. And Adrian Sampson done with baseball. So,
for real? I didn't know that.
I think his career is over. That's what I thought. He may still be trying to come back, but I thought his arm just kind of had one of those, yeah, well, not again, bud. Sorry. Sorry. No.
I thought somebody had picked him up and he was still rehabbing.
But the last bit of information I believe that I could find on him was he was like claimed by the Rangers in like November of 2016, mm-hmm. and he has not pitched. The last game he threw in was that MLB game in June of 2016. He has not thrown since then.
Well, I just assumed he was going to have TJ. I mean, that looked like TJ to me.
I believe that was the case. In any case, Andrew Moore thankfully had a more auspicious start to his career. And
it was super fun to be there, right? Like, just, and I guess, so what Andrew Moore has that's specific to him is because he's a Northwest kid, because he's, you know, kind of one of us, he went to school here, and he had a huge cheering section. Yeah, seriously, I just threw that tweet up about him drinking out of the water bottle because I was like, funny, what a Northwest kid. But that really seemed to resonate with people that he cares about the environment. He doesn't like wasting things.
There were as many OSU hats as Mariners hats where we were sitting for that game, which was quite entertaining. So it was certainly neat to see, the support there, and you know, in a stretch where it felt like a lot was on the up, to see Moore sort of come back and come up and succeed, and then to see Felix come back and, you know, not be dominant, but three runs over six innings, or I believe it was, three runs over six innings, and the offense just completely run Joe Musgrove out of the, you know, out of the stadium. Yeah, it was a wonderful stretch of business. It was as much fun as I've had watching the Mariners, in a long time. For that sort of two-week stretch of, oh, Mike Zunino looks good again. Oh, like, you know, Haniger and Gamel and Dyson and Heredia all look good. It was, you know, a stretch where you looked at every single hitter in the lineup and you said, I'm excited to watch that person hit. Something good can happen. Something good is not implausible when they step up to the plate. What a freaking concept. Like, uncharted territory in the last decade of Mariners lineups. And, you know, that is something that is cool to see. And I think we'll still see, you know, for the rest of this year. But especially during that last week, you know, I think it was incredibly fun to watch.
Absolutely. And, you know, Jerry said on the radio today that this was his 1%, first percentile outcome for Andrew Moore. Like, he thought he would come in, he had no idea that he would throw seven innings of three-run ball, right? So, I mean, it just kind of felt like, oh, hey, all these pieces could get together and they could click.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
Yeah, well, and, you know, so the first step, and it's interesting, right? Because, like, when we went into that series with the Astros, I think I had sort of said, like, I expect that we'll win one out of three. And if we win one out of three, like, that'll be okay. Mm-hmm. It would be neat if we won two out of three, and, you know, I'd feel awesome. But, like, being 500 coming out of that series would be awesome. Losing two, then straight to the Phillies. Like, on the one hand, it feels especially potent, I think, and, you know, I'd be curious to hear what what you think on this, because, like, you have Monday off. You play two games against the worst team in baseball. You lose both. You have Thursday off. So you're just sitting.
Yeah.
Just
stewing
soaking.
With that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like,
marinating
just letting
in the
brine get in. Mm, exactly.
It's so salty. So
and
bitter.
And it feels awful. And you add on that the Drew Smyly news, which, you know, I know you had been pessimistic about his health from the start.
You know, I have said before that I'm a powerful witch.
And sometimes and there for was good, just, sometimes for ill.
I just remember when that news came down around yeah. spring training, and I was at home, and I went and climbed in the bathtub, and I just sat in the bathtub and pressed myself against the cool tile, and I was like, Drew Smyly will not pitch for the Mariners this year, and probably not. Just because he's such an injury, so it's not all just pure gut instinct, yeah. like... It's his injury history, and it's the way that I feel like, you know, it's the experience with Charlie Furbush trying to do the platelet-rich plasma injections and not having that work. Like, you can't cheat the arm. Like, you can't cheat your arm and the arm health. And I read The Arm by Passan, and, you know, it's just, at some point, it just has to be surgery. And so while I was expecting it in some way, like, just having that confirmation, just, it really felt like a slap in the face.
It was as bad of timing as possible, because it just, as you said, like, I was not looking at this and thinking, like, looking at this team and thinking, like, oh, yeah, and definitely they're going to have Drew Smyly back in 2 weeks, and that's going to make a big difference. Like, at best, it was like, oh, like, this guy might be back in 2 weeks. He's going to be on, like, a serious pitch count. Like, he's going to have to work up as, like, for at least a month. And, you know, even then, you have no guarantees. But, like, when you build a team around defense, especially outfield defense, you know, you can account for a lot. Or you can account for some, certainly. And that's certainly what the Mariners have done. You know, with a rotation where the only pitcher with a higher, I think, an above 50% ground ball rate is Sam Gaviglio, who works his own sort of sinister magics on opponents that I fear for at any given moment. But it's just it is a punch in the gut. You know, in terms of the potential, the room for error and the you know, not, I mean, obviously for the room for error in terms of this team as currently constructed, but it also makes it much less justifiable to seek to make the team better in the short term, in terms of looking at the trade deadline for an extra, you know, reliever. Instead, now you'd have to be looking for a veteran starter, or you'd have to be looking for, you know, a serious upgrade at first base, maybe, or, you know, something where, or catcher, if you know, Zunino falls off again. And it's just like, instead of looking for things to fill in, because you're getting healthy and you're seeing your team come together, you're now seeing, once again, this is the fringes of contention, and a team that, instead of needing a reasonable amount to go right, that needs everything to go right.
Yeah.
Which,
I mean, it was a thin wire to begin with, because
absolutely,
whenever you'd say, we're not going to blow it all up, we're going to try to patch these things together and make it on these strengths. I mean, on paper, it looked like it was going to work, right? It did not.
It certainly looked reasonable.
Reasonable. Yeah, that's a better way to put it.
Oh, yeah. I'm not trying to, like, I was very enthusiastic about this team. As enthusiastic as anyone. I fully cop to that.
But you know how there's the spot in the novel where, you know, the brave band of warriors has been fighting on, and they believe that the cavalry is coming, and then they find out that, you know, they come to a battle site or something and see everybody just lying in a pool of blood. And you're like, oh, there is no help for us here. There is no help coming. There is nothing at Tacoma. Nothing. Yeah. Maybe Emilio Pagan, who is pitching, like, his hair is on fire. Everything, he turned it back to brown, and then it's like the blonde just kind of transferred, that fire just transferred down his arm, and he is really, really impressive. But Casey Lawrence, you know, as a long reliever piece, but who, and honestly, I think prefer over Giovanni Gallardo, who just looks disastrous every time he goes out there. He does.
It's all, it's just as you said. And to that point, like, this could be fine if the bullpen was performing.
Yes.
And instead of performing sort of average, you know, a bullpen that, you know, it obviously it's tough to trust bullpens, but, you know, a bullpen that was looked at and I think generally universally looked at and thought, okay, this could be a reasonable strength, not only has not been a strength, but has been fairly disastrous. And, you know, you've seen Diaz struggle a ton to start the year, come back, look fine, and then just over the last couple games look certainly not nearly as bad as he did, I think, mechanically at the start of the year, but just not have his control be, you know, instead of walking in the world, he's throwing strikes, but very hittable strikes, and you know, not making adjustment. And we've seen that, as you know, Kate, you and I have talked you've seen that with Altavilla, you know, another guy who has this explosive stuff, but hasn't quite made the adjustment to, okay, I can't just throw 98, 99, 100 and have it be anywhere and get, you know, strikeouts. And so we're seeing home runs off of, you know, at an exceptional rate because there just haven't been adjustments made.
It turns out if you throw even 100 over the middle of the plate, major league hitters will do something with that.
Yeah.
Double A hitters, not so much.
Yeah.
But major league hitters, yes. And the surprise factor with them has worn off. You know, they've been in the league long enough that there's scouting reports on them. People have seen them enough that pure velocity isn't going to do it anymore.
Yeah. Thankfully, no one has a scouting report on Nick Vincent. I don't know what he does, but he's
wizardry
burrowing into front offices everywhere and just lighting them on fire, throwing them on the ground, and disappearing in a puff of smoke. God bless Nick Vincent and his 89-mile-per-hour fastballs.
God bless Nick Vincent when he is not being overworked. And so, I mean, I think we've given Service a lot of grief about bullpen management, but you know, he's learned a lesson with dealing with Nick Vincent, and I think that just year to year that shows a lot of growth there. You can't just run this dude out for three innings and then one inning and then two innings and expect him to have any effectiveness.
To that point, you know, there, I think there have been reasonable complaints about Service and bullpen management. And certainly I would not call it anything, you know, approaching a strength, but the players have not backed him. Necessarily backed him up. It's not as though, like, you know, he's getting hung out to dry necessarily. Like he can do a better job, but you know, anywhere that he has turned outside of Vincent or Zipchinski against lefties has been pretty shaky, and you know, that's been, you know, that's made a huge difference in terms of, you know, when you have a good offense but not much, you know, in your rotation, and you need you need your bullpen to be a strength, and it just hasn't been there this year. And that's something that they could target if they want to still make a run. You know, I mean, I haven't looked since a couple days ago, but I would imagine they're under, they're still three or four games back of the wild card, even with a sort of abysmal
stretch.
Yeah,
I think that's right.
Yeah, two and a half games out of the wild card after a horrible game.
Thank you, American League.
Yeah, because as we said, if you're going to have a year where you want to compete, this is the best year in the history of baseball to be able to compete, And so that obviously, makes them, they're still 6-4 in their last 10 games, which it does not feel like.
Right, and there's entirely a possibility that they'll rip off another run, right? And we'll be sitting here saying, whoa, what should we buy at the trade deadline next week? And I know Matt Calkins at the time, who's not a favorite of mine by any stretch, but he has taken some heat because he, obviously did the whole, don't give up on this team. They might just do it. And then had to turn around literally 2 days later and say, M's are skidding. What's next for them? And, God bless him. The man has to write his columns and he's got to ladle the takes out because that's what he gets paid for. And I have the freedom of saying, I get to be Barnaby. I get to say I would prefer not to have a take. That's and true. I would prefer to hang back. But honestly, I think that's
Kate,
what you... What?
I'm going to stop you because this is a delightful moment in my life and perhaps the only time I'm going to get to correct you on a literary reference. But I believe you referred to... You did call him Barnaby from, I believe, the circus?
I did.
As opposed to our dear friend Bartleby.
Bartleby!
Sorry, that is a personal celebration for me because I had to watch the acid trip that is the Bartleby movie.
I watched that too!
In junior year high school at LA. Mm-hmm. Anyways, with that personal just sort of checklist satisfied.
Yeah, Barnaby, Bartleby, yep. Mm-hmm. It's funny because it came out of my mouth and I was like, that's not right.
Nope.
Yeah.
But.
Okay, anyway, sorry.
Certainly. So.
I appreciate you letting me make it up. You could have totally just roasted me and.
It is generally not my preference to well actually, but in a something that you so thoroughly outclass my knowledge in, I am going to jump at this opportunity.
I'm sorry too. I got slightly distracted by seeing a notification come off my phone across my phone that Gene Machi has given up a grand slam in that Tacoma game, and now they're losing.
That is.
Triple A
All Star.
Triple A All Star Gene Machi. Jesus Christ. I was just thinking how much better today was. Clinton didn't win because they never win, but Modesto was crushing as per usual. And now Everett has given up their lead. Oh my God. Why aren't any of the. And Arkansas got crushed too. Why aren't any of the teams good anymore?
They will be all right.
All right. All right. Sorry. Okay.
Kyle Lewis is 2-for-7 in rehab, so that is something.
Yeah.
He has knees and he's coming.
He has knees and he's a coming.
Indeed. I guess the thing I'm curious then is if the Mariners are going to sort of make any sort of moves at the deadline, what do you see as a potential fit? I realize that's about a month out, almost a month exactly, and we'll probably post this on Friday, the 30th. So, the needs seem pretty clear. They would need a veteran starter, and I believe you're a little bit opposed. I don't want to put words in your mouth of the Bartolo train.
That train can just turn right around and go back where it came from.
But he's getting so unlucky.
He's slightly unlucky, I guess. But he's got that 40% strand rate.
Right, but that's what I'm talking about. That is unfortunate. That is not his fault.
Is it though? Is it, or is he maybe just allowing hits to pile up instead of I haven't watched any Bartolo Colon this year. I mean, other than
I think he's had some bad. I think he's had some bad cluster luck. His strikeout rate is in line with the last couple of years. His walks are a little bit up, but they're still not outrageous or anything.
Yeah, Sam Gavilio actually has a higher walk rate, which was upsetting to me. Sam, something is off with Sam, though. I think he's honestly still learning to pitch at the major league level, I think. And he does get a little scared sometimes. And he pitches scared once in a while. And he needs to stop doing that and just pitch to contact. I hope Casey drives up from Oregon State now that they're out. Now that they're out for the year, I hope he drives up and gives them a little talking to about that.
Gavilio's sort of MO of I'm going to throw it at the corner of the zone every time and just hope they call it a strike does seem like a self-preservation move, though, that has some wisdom considering, when you throw 89 and you are facing George Springer, that could be your best bet.
Yeah, just put it on the corners of the zone, and that's what he does. He has good command. He's similar to Moore. He works with lesser stuff, although Moore has a better everything, and the better control. But I mean, we can certainly use somebody like that.
And so, speaking of somebody, sorry.
Right.
Obviously the biggest target. I mean, I think a week ago we would have said the biggest target would be some relievers, which I find difficult to get all that jazzed about in terms of, trading for a proven reliever because Steve Cishek's a proven reliever. And, that can be nothing the next year. Joaquin Benoit was a proven reliever.
Man, I was watching the kid we gave up for Benoit today. He was the starter against the Travelers, and he looked good. Yeah. De Los Santos, I think. Mm-hmm. I was pretty bummed about that in retrospect, because that kid looks like a major leaguer.
Indeed. Well, and Drew Storen was closing for the Reds this year, I believe. Cool. I think he's no longer, but regardless. So I think the Mariners would obviously have to trade. There's a few ways to go about it. One is, sort of sell out, a few ways that, teams acquire present talent. Obviously, you can sell your off of your farm. The Mariners don't have a lot of sort of talent to sell from the farm that they would get much in return from other MLB teams. They have Tyler O'Neill, who's been struggling so far. They have Kyle Lewis, who's rehabbing and is at the bottom of his value. They have DJ Peterson, who's struggling this year.
He's on a hot streak right now.
He is on a hot streak.
He's put together. DJ sees, I think, an opportunity because Vogelbach is not taking the step forward he needs to take to get to the majors, which is to be a power hitter. Vogelbach is hitting singles, and he's hitting great, good, sharp singles, and he's taking a ton of walks, and he's not striking out a lot. But with his speed and his defensive limitations, it's not what's going to move him forward, unfortunately.
I'm sorry. Are you speaking about Dan Vogelbach of the 3 stolen bases this year? Only 2 fewer than DJ Peterson?
He prefers Daniel.
He does. And perhaps he will earn it. But I think we've sort of rehashed and is sort of generally known, there is not a lot of...
No. As far as like blue chip or even light blue chip or even like
chip.
Hold it up to the light and it's kind of milky colored chip. No, we have a lot of guys who are, I think, working their butts off, but who other people in other front offices don't look at and say, that's a guy I gotta have me some Johan Quevedo.
Exactly.
Yeah, no. Even though he's having a really solid, nice little season down there at Clinton. It's
exactly, and so what the team does have to work with is what they have sort of in the MLB or AAA level, because right. that's what they've acquired a lot of, essentially, is, you know, they sold from the single A levels last year and the year before to find guys in the AA and AAA and MLB level. And now we have six sort of MLB quality, or at least guys who could be on an MLB roster, outfielders, that you can trade from, because we have fortunately found some guys who can play and you don't necessarily need to hold on to someone like you could trade someone like Gerard Dyson, who has been the Mariners' most valuable player by FWAR, or offensive player by FWAR, obviously, but is, you know, the trade-off of Dyson's value when you have Gamel and Heredia and Haniger behind him, and you have, you know, Boog Powell, and you have Leonis Martin, and you have just a series of players.
Ian Miller, Chuck Taylor. Yeah,
exactly. Whatever an Andrew Applin is. I know not your favorite player, but someone that, you know, essentially that's where their depth is. And if you're going to deal from anywhere, that has to be where they're going to do so.
Yeah. In listening to Jared, so one thing that I love to do with my English degree is parse everything that comes out of Jerry DePoto's mouth. So on the Jerry DePoto show today on 710, he said pretty much that you can rule out the idea of an expensive rental. They're not going after that. Obviously, we know that Jerry does not like spending the money. He said multiple times that we may be shopping for 2018. And that they're talking to people and they're talking to other teams and they're active and talking about who's a good fit. But that sounds very tradey and yes. maybe smaller moves. But he said multiple times we're looking beyond 2017. And that obviously we all know that we need a pitcher, but the trade deadline is, quote, the most expensive time to go to the pitcher store. And it is. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like, barring a miracle run, kind of facing the reality that the team is not going to be in contention this year and looking forward towards planning towards next year. Do the best you can, build up some trade value on some of the guys that we have, and start looking, like you said, at who would be a good potential partner.
Yes. What comes to mind for you in that potential partner range then?
Well, as you said, we have tons of outfield prospects. Mm. So I started looking at teams that maybe have an aging outfield. Because one thing that we're very, very spoiled by is I turn on other MLB games sometimes and I look at their outfield defense and I'm like, I can't believe you let that drop. And meanwhile, it's a totally routine base hit. It would have been the hit probability is probably in the 80s, but I know in my heart that Guillermo would come swooping in like absolutely. The vampire bat that he is and then just materialize in front of the ball and catch it.
Right.
You know, we're so spoiled. So I was trying to think of who has the creakiest outfield while having lots of pitching prospects that they could maybe would be willing to deal from, the close to MLB ready type, who could maybe just go through an accelerated development process and make it up to the majors to help us out next year. Mm. I trust this regime's ability to develop a pitcher. I think that what they did with Andrew Moore was super smart. They were very careful with him. They set him into situations where he would have success. Mm-hmm. They gave him a soft landing with his MLB debut against Detroit. Mm-hmm. Very righty heavy lineup. Mm-hmm. They're giving him another, I think, pretty good landing rather than making him go to LA to pitch there. He's going to make another at home start. against the Royals. So, yeah, at Ariel Miranda. I think Ariel Miranda is another success story.
And at least something that, you know, in terms of cost, that the cost and the value, I completely agree, because, you know, that money then can go, you know, for the production you're getting from Miranda, you then can spend that money elsewhere, or you have the flexibility to, you know, the difference in cost between Wade Miley and Ariel Miranda is what Gene Segura will be paid next year. You know, like, that's, or, you know, a significant, you know, sort of bump that allows you, or, you know, the freedom you get there. You know, that's Gerard Dyson and Drew Smyly and Nick, or and you know, Danny Valencia, roughly. And so, yeah, as you said, you know, I think there have been successes and there have been failures, but the up until Smyly sort of being declared out for this year and last year, I think the there have been no really massive failures, I guess.
I mean, this is a different line of conversation that we can talk about, but
sure.
And that's something that I've been working on, actually, is listing out his trade. You know, because I think there are some that don't get noticed. Like, yeah, Zach Littell. God, I'm already forgetting their names. Littell, who we traded for Pazos. At first, I was like, I do not get this trade at all. Littell is great. He is one of our only good pitching pro. You know, it was a gamble. We're taking gambles. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe Littell develops into something great for them. But Pazos has been one of the more dependable arms. Even though he's had some meltdowns, you know, he's young. It's going to happen.
Indeed. And has been one of the more dependable arms.
Yeah.
Nonetheless.
Recency bias aside, for sure. okay, four teams that I identified that I think would make good trade partners for us.
Yeah.
The Royals. They have very little in the way of either a current offense outfield or prospects coming up.
Yeah, and their outfield defense really is suffering. You know who they could use?
they would need to see what speed do again, are you saying?
Yeah, they might want another look, since certainly what Alex Gordon does is not been impressive.
That's what speed don't.
Yeah. We don't need to talk about Alex Gordon all that much, but wowzers, what a fall off that guy has had.
I feel like there are like six or seven Royals that you could say that about, though. Like,
it's true. I mean, Brandon Moss has done nothing, I believe, and that's been kind of rough, but yeah. And yet, I believe they're now half a game ahead of us.
Yeah, they're the surging, which is fun. Whit Merrifield out of from the top rope.
Indeed.
Whit. Royals are a good option, I think. Obviously, when you think creaky outfield, you have to think the Baltimore Orioles.
Yes.
Who are also really pretty thin on the farm overall. The only reason I wouldn't maybe love the idea of trading with them is I don't love their farm. I don't know a ton about it because we don't, I think, play. They're Norfolk, right? Yeah, we don't play any of, we don't have any affiliates who play any of those guys, but they have some pitching prospects.
I realize it's interesting in going through this that you sort of see the patterns, perhaps even of the last few years, of teams that are good fits for trades, and I'm curious if that has continued in perpetuity, because, you know, the Orioles have sort of this, you know, a stadium that is such a hitter-friendly park that perhaps it has always allowed them to, you know, issue sort of excellent outfield in favor of acquiring, just power hitting, and we have been able to supply them with hitting in exchange for pitching, but Yeah, it that seems like a reasonable fit, albeit a low ceiling one.
Yeah, I think that's the that's I wouldn't start with making calls to the Orioles, probably. I would no. There are a lot more, I think, intriguing names in the Royals system. Mm. The Mets, they're their system is not great either. Although the Tacoma Rainiers are right now getting their butts handed to them by the 51s and are about to lose a series to them. But not because they're a good team, unfortunately.
Indeed.
That's more of the Rainiers pitching.
Brain drain.
Knocking themselves out of games, unfortunately. And then the final team that I had on my list, and probably my favorite for looking at a potential trade, is the Cardinals.
Yeah. And that's most interesting to me, right? Because they have this outfield of underachievers with Grichuk, Randall Grichuk, and Steven Piscotty, and injured players, which I think both of those two, if I'm not mistaken, have seen some time on the DL. And then Dexter Fowler has been on the DL for a while now. But they are sort of still hanging around in their divisional race, and in a down Cubs year, maybe this could be a situation where they try and snag an upgrade and sneak in a little bit. And they are flush with pitching prospects.
So many. I have always loved how the Cardinals, you know, it was funny. I was watching back old futures games, or, mm-hmm. Perfect games. I was watching back old perfect games.
Uh-huh.
I forget why. why was I doing this? But every time.
Because it was sunny out and you did not want
I don't leave my house.
Heaven forbid you enjoy.
No, heaven
the
forfend.
Nicest day.
Vitamin what now? No. No, I was watching perfect games. I was looking for someone specific. I can't remember. But I was looking, every time a pitching prospect came up, I'd be like, oh, who is that? I like that. Jack Flaherty is the one that stands out the most to me. I was like, I want that kid. And every time I looked them up, it was like, property of the St. Louis Cardinals, which I hate that term to begin with, but.
It is an odd way.
It's super, it just makes watching the futures game super uncomfortable, or the AFL when they're like, property of the weird human chattel. Anyway, so yes, the Cardinals love their pitching prospects, love their development. You know, we got Sam Gavigalo from the Cardinals. I think it makes tons of sense. And non-divisional rival, not even in our league. So, but you know, for all the trading that Jerry's done, he's never, I think that there are some people who are more, apt to deal with him than others. And
yes.
Just the fact that we've never seen anything go down between the Cardinals and the Mariners makes me wonder if they maybe don't have a cooperative front office.
I don't know. I mean, well, Jerry has been unable to get them, but do you recall off the top of your head what lovely former Mariner we exchanged to acquire Sam Gavilio back in 2014?
It was, I know this.
Yes, you do, and you saw him recently.
Ty Kelly.
It was Tyrod Kelly.
Tyrod.
Probably not Tyrod,
no.
But possibly Tyrod, and I don't have to click on this baseball reference link and confirm it. So
you
I'm
know what? We
Tyrod.
Won that trade just because I don't have to look at Ty Kelly anymore.
It's true.
I mean,
it's
I don't like to be mean about people's appearances, but his face is weird to me. He looks like he is like he came out of the 30s, right? He's got a little bit of that Tuffy Ghost Witch face going on, where he looks like he's a time traveler who.
You are not the first person to remark this. I think I had this with the same conversation with a few different people I've watched this and my dad that thought like he was a guy from 1930 who had just kind of popped up and was like, "Yep, time to play some baseball. Let's do it."
It's a very high concept, like FX show about a guy who time travels. and is a baseball player nowadays, but really he's from the 30s. So he's lots of funny scenes of him trying to figure out the tweeter.
Incredibly niche, but man, I would watch that. Oh yeah, we'd live the tweet the hell out of that shit. But yeah, so that I think I would agree. To come back to your point is, you know, in terms of acquiring pitching talent, especially if the Mariners are going to do some sort of, you know, light selling, or, you know, selling without fully selling like they did last year, you know, RE, the Wade Miley trade, you know, the players that they have there are, you know, Steve Cishek, Jerod Dyson, Danny Valencia, perhaps if he keeps playing, you know, keeps hitting decently, you know, and all of those are, you know, sort of players where it's like they definitely make this team better right now, and to lose them you risk making the team worse, but the depth at their positions, you know, those are sort of the only positions you can really trade from, and not necessarily, you know, and reasonably look at and say, well, we do have other people at this spot, you know, in terms of first base, obviously with Vogelbach, and, you know, DJ Peterson has been hot lately. He's still overall been pretty rough this year, but maybe showing signs of life, and, you know, just positions where, you know, the outfield, yes, Dyson has been incredible and fun, and I love watching him play and do not want to miss out on that, but if in the next few weeks the Mariners can't build up some level of win bank, essentially, before August, right, where they are on the road for the entirety
of, brutal,
you know, then they really, you know, I mean, you know, it was a two-game series this week, and they lost, and it was rough, and it's not the end of the world, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be the end of the season, but because they've had such little room for error this whole year, every sort of bad stretch has felt crushing.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the year, they may be. But
let's talk about who isn't going to be on that trade block, though, because I know that whenever trade speculation starts up, you know, there's no one who's untouchable. But I think from everything that Jerry has said, we're looking a lot at retooling and coming back in 2018 and trying to contend again.
Right.
And I just don't think, even if he has value, because of what he means to the team, I don't think there's any way Cruz is dealt.
It would be surprising. And yeah, I think it really would take a significant offer. To your point, like, there is no situation where I think Jerry sees a deal that, you know, I don't think Jerry has ever, you know, said something is completely off the table, but, you know, it is one of those situations where I think the Mariners probably value him more highly than any other team. And I don't necessarily think that's wrong. What that means, of course, is they're going to try and run it back next year. And that might be differently if Daniel Vogelbach was hitting the cover off the ball, and you could look and say, okay, we've got a first base DH ready and, you know, able to take over, but the sort of leadership role and the statistical output that Cruz has had, you know, this year is hard to, you know, look at and say, well, we need to get rid of him just because he's, you know, old and struggling, you know, because, you know, he's got a 134 WRC plus, I believe.
Ooh.
You know, he's not getting as many pitches in the strike zone, but he's got a higher walk rate and a lower K rate than I think any time in the last, like, 6 years. So, you know, he's still the guy that we saw last year, and he's still the guy that is worth, you know, is a significant asset for what he's being paid, which is really wild, but yeah.
And I just mean, from, like, the clubhouse leadership standpoint, I just don't... Mm-hmm. Because you do that, you make Cano unhappy, you make Segura unhappy, and you just committed a bunch of money to Cano and Segura. There's probably a way to spin it into, like, it's for the better good, and Nelson is so selfless, and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. He wanted to do whatever he could do to help the team. And I mean, but I don't see it.
Yeah.
And
it's a tough situation because, you know, there is a lot of value they could get, but I think the commitment they've made means that Nelson Cruz is a part of that, part of this team throughout the rest of his contract. And the fact that that's not a terrible decision is pretty amazing considering where it was when we first got him. And the fact that that's a reasonable decision is pretty impressive.
Absolutely. Speaking of people who I don't think are tradable, and this may come as surprising or distressing to certain Astros fans, I don't think there's any way they trade James Paxton. I mean, it's dumb enough that I feel, like, dumb for saying it, but I guess we have to say it. No, they're not trading James Paxton to you, Astros fans.
That was a really... so one of... a member of the LL community, Sahil, sent me a link to this, and you can find it somewhere, but this suggestion that that James Paxton might be the best trade target for the Astros, and
under the radar, James Paxton. Yeah, that was my under the radar.
You don't trade an ace potential guy. Your only real ace potential guy in your entire system for the next 4 to 5 years, when
to a division rival.
Yeah, when he's not at the peak of his value even remotely.
Quintana. To a division rival that doesn't have any pitching in their own system.
Uh-huh. With team control for still a few years. You know, this is not Chris Sale. This is not... Yeah. So, you know, they're not going to trade Paxton. They're not going to trade...
Andrew Moore.
Yeah. They're not going to trade Segura. They're not going to trade Seager. I mean,
there's a core, and there's a core that they're building around. And honestly, I think that extends to the bullpen in some ways too. I think I'm not sure they're thrilled with Diaz right now.
And understandably,
They need to get their mental guys in to work with him though, because I think I've looked at stuff. I don't think it's mechanical. I think it's mental.
Right. Yeah, and we've looked at that together. And as you know, exactly as you said, like his mechanic. You know, early in the season, he was stepping across. You know, he was landing and he was throwing across his body, and everything was flying open, and it was bad. And they worked on that with him, and he's been back in the strike zone. And now it's just he's missing by, you know, 6 inches as opposed to a foot or two, which is enough to still be effective plenty of the time, but it can also be enough to, you know, give up a home run to Tommy Joseph. So, again, those are situations where it's just like there are not many people on this team that are in a, you know, that you could sell high on.
Right.
And the ones that are the guy, you know, are
your core guys. Term,
you know, either core guys exactly, or are 1 year guys. They're not.
Right. Valencia, Dyson.
Right.
Right. Okay. Right.
So, yeah. So, the, you know, I think, as you said, to bring it all the way back, small moves seem likely, similar to last offseason.
Prospect for prospect. I could see it. Prospect for prospects flip.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe a few small sales and just see if, you know, there's a little bit of magic in, you know, maybe, you know, either trading Leonis and, you know, or seeing if Leonis has any trade value now built up, or trading Dyson and then bringing Leonis back.
That's more likely, I think.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, you have one guy who's got success at the major league level right now, right, and one who doesn't. I could definitely see a scenario where that happens and Leonis comes up and just, like, blossoms too, which I think would really make us all happy. I wonder if because the 2017 team has been hard for me to love, and I wonder how much of that is the loss of Dejo and the loss of Leonis. Like, our personalities. It's, you know, obviously we love Robbie and we love Cruz, but those were the guys. Oh, man, Leonis is... He's so funny. He's been so nice to me every time I've seen him in Tacoma. He is not happy there. He does not love the traffic that he has to get through to get there. He doesn't love being in Tacoma, but he's a good attitude about it, you know? And he jokes around with the staff, and he's great.
This is the best argument, though, that I've heard against, like, building better public transportation is we would miss out on the Instagram live videos of Leon, or in the Snapchats of Leonis and Gene Segura.
I can't believe this.
And, like, was it Guillermo who was singing?
Yeah.
In traffic the other day. So,
fantastic. Just live downtown, guys. Live on the light rail. Like, it's
not that hard. Come on.
You know Andrew Moore will do that. You know Andrew Moore. Andrew Moore just recently got rid of the 94 Camry that he was driving for another like early 2000s model Camry. I could use
an early 90s Camry. He needs to hit me up with that. All right, is there anything more that I think you have on your mind for in terms of sort of the planning?
I'm in a much less grumpy... My display name on our little chat here is Cranky Kate. Because I've been so cranky about this team. And really, like, talking this out, I feel much less cranky.
I'm so glad.
You know, things happened, and they did not break our way this year, and that sucks. Mm-hmm. And probably the season is done, probably. I mean, maybe they make a miracle run, but, you know, just the smiley news was, I think, pretty devastating.
It puts it in a situation now of, you know, this team will have to essentially make the playoffs with the worst rotation that I think any playoff team has
Christian
ever. Meaning to look at this, and they like, every time I'm like, no, like, that's not that. And then they get worse. Like, the rotation somehow gets worse, or, like, at least, like, the what you had expected for them. So you can probably expect an article in the next week or two on, like, what is the trashiest rotation that has ever made a playoffs? Not because, like, the Mariners are that likely to make the playoffs, but mainly, I'm just curious, like, how bad are they? So,
I don't like to call them trashy or bad or whatever. Like, I think everybody is pretty good at their roles. I think Ariel Miranda is really good at being a four, and Andrew Moore is really good at being a four or a five. And Felix is realistically a three, and Pax is a one, but, like, we don't have the two. And, I mean, even if you want to slide Felix up and say, okay, he's a two, Miranda's probably not a three. Maybe with some development, maybe next year, maybe Moore slides up and he's a four, but it's just...
Right.
There's a hole, and the hole was, it was a smiley-shaped hole, and he was supposed to step in and fill it, and that's not going to happen, so. Who will fill our, no, I don't want to say that. That sounds horrible.
All right, so I feel pretty good. You know, I think looking forward, the Mariners, we've got a game, you know, a series in LA this weekend, and then they come home Who's the series against when they come back home?
It's the Royals. I told you that.
It's Oh, yes. So, you know, some potentially, you know, winnable games. Obviously, the Angels have played well, but they still don't have Trout. And
yeah, it doesn't seem
wins.
To have stopped them, though. And they've, like, been our nemesis this year, I feel like. Like, they are just as hurt as us and somehow doing okay.
Yeah. I mean, where are they? They're a game ahead of us right now. Yeah. They're two games ahead of us right now. You know, if we win the series, we would be essentially a game back from them. If we swept them, you know, we'll leapfrog them and be right back over 500. So, you know, there's a lot to be frustrated about, and certainly it doesn't feel all that exciting. But Kate, I'm glad we could get together and sort of talk it out. As you said, you know, I think it feels better than I feel.
It feels
better,
right? So we've got Miranda, Paxton, and
Moore. No, Moore's starting on the.
No, Moore's starting on that. Yeah, is it Gavilio time, or did he just pitch?
What is our rotation? What our rotation?
What is rotation?
What is the freaking? Oh,
it was
Christ.
Felix, so should it be? It'll be Miranda, and then who will it be on the first?
Gavilio.
Because my hat bag.
Oh, it'll be. Want to be Paxton?
Well, it'll be Miranda, and then Paxton.
Gavilio.
But
I think the site, the website has Miranda Gavilio, and then
Paxton
unlisted for the Sunday game, but
unlisted.
I would project. I haven't pulled it up. So
that's weird. My at bat app has Paxton listed as the Sunday starter, and then it has Miranda listed as both the Saturday and the Friday starters. So
hey, he's a busy man. I don't know what you're worried about.
I mean, he has been a godsend in the rotation this year.
Indeed.
So.
Or at least a demigod. I'm not sure we're getting full treatment, but
all right, fair enough. I think it's got to be Gavilio, though. Gavilio hasn't pitched in a while, so
right.
I think it's got to be Gavilio, Miranda, Paxton, and then we come back with Moore, and we have the series against Kansas City, and then Oakland comes to town, and then it's All-Star break. So, like, just limp through this, you polyester-clad ninny mugginses.
Exactly.
Just get, play respectively and get us to the All-Star break, and we'll regroup there.
Yeah. So, all right. Well,
are we not doing questions?
We'll
do questions next time. We'll take the questions because we sort of announced this late, so we'll roll the questions forward for next time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that sounds good. Kate, and anything else pressing on your mind? As I believe the Tacoma game has just concluded.
Tyler O'Neill walk off.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Nice to see.
Oh, man, I've been missing, because, you know, he was just so fun at Jackson, and I know that it's hard for him, and it's hard for us, and we all want him to be great, and he wants to be great, and he's young for the level, and he's facing some guys with MLB experience who throw him off-speed stuff that's not junk, and he's having to adjust. So it's good to see him still be able to take a mistake pitch, because, oh boy, was this a terrible pitch. Oh, no, he did the pop-up finger. He tried to do the pop-up finger after. Oh, no. Oh, friend. Oh, that's embarrassing. Oh, yeah, he does the sky point. Oh, that's so embarrassing. But, yeah, it's great to see him maybe start to round into form a little. He's been pretty hot lately, and I know something like this is going to be a huge morale boost for him. So hopefully we see some great stuff out of him these next couple weeks.
It would be very nice. And we will have that for you, whether it occurs or whether it goes south, on the site and here next week.
All the news that's fit to print and some that isn't. right?
Most that is not.
Most that is not. Oh, no. Softy retweeted my Tyler O'Neill tweet.
Interest is still interest.
Interest is interest. I can't wait to read my replies. R.I.P. R.I.P. Can I hand the account off on a night when the Mariners aren't playing?
Yes. Wonderful.
All right. All right, friend. Well, thank you for chatting this through. I do feel like this was curative for me. Like, I feel like I went to
cathartic.
Yeah, I went to the spa a little bit. Just got like all that darkness and disappointment of the Phillies series scrubbed right off.
Yeah, it's a few games, and one way or another, we will find out what the rest of this year has over the next few weeks, and. The uncertainty is more frustrating than knowing one way or another.
So. But we get closer to certainty every day. At least now with Smiley for sure out, we have more of a sense of, okay, this is what it is, and now we move forward from here. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. And we hope that this was curative or restorative to you as well. Mm-hmm. And we will catch you all next week.
Underneath the palm trees, you can leave your worries. I don't need nobody, you and me together. Run away from mama, still live with your mama. That's alright, we gon' make this trip together. Popping up at parties, drinking on Bacardi, singing Cool J, I just wanna love you better. And I just wanna